ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Welcome to Medialand, your weekly look at what's happening behind the scenes and on your screens. I'm Tim Burrows.
And I'm Danielle Said, filling in for Vivian Kelly.
This week, the Walkley Awards celebrate journalistic excellence.
And it's the perfect time to buy a media company, maybe.
And is gambling advertising set to stay a constant on our screens? Quentin Beresford joins us later in the show. Well, it's been a big award week for Australian media. The Walkley Awards took place on Thursday night.
And there were some big winners this year, Tim, last night at the ICC.
Yeah, what stood out for you, Dani, amongst those winners?
Well, of course, I think the biggest story of the year, and it was quite widely tipped in the circles that I've spoken to in the lead-up, was the reporting by the ABC on the childcare crisis and sort of the allegations and charges that are going around Victorian childcare in particular. So the Gold Walkley was won by Adele Ferguson and Chris Gillett from Four Corners and 7:30 for that reporting. But there were also lots of winners, really big winners. For me, the hospitality reporting from the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age and Good Food.
So this was in the one into the Swillhurst Group.
Correct,
and the conduct
yeah.
of the management there.
Exactly right. And so that's Eric Bagshaw, Bianca Horvat and Claire Sibthorpe. And then you've also got the other one that stood out for me was actually, again, here at the ABC, Media Watch. And the Media Watch team, Linton Besser and Mario Christodoulou won for commentary, analysis, opinion and critique. And that was a bit of a body of work. But two of those winning stories were stories that were reporting on the ABC. And I think that's just shows how important it is to have a really robust ABC with reporters there that have a really, really strong sense of independence and civic duty about it. So that was really gratifying to see there too. And obviously they're in the building as well. So,
and you know, it's funny you mentioned that. Something which occurred to me reading the newspapers, or admittedly online in their coverage of the Walkleys, was how each of them would talk about their own wins, but they wouldn't actually talk about the industry-wide wins. So I'm not sure that journalism independence always goes as far as when journalists talk about themselves.
Journalists, I mean, they famously love to only acknowledge, you know, when it's in-house. And I think that particular sort of streak of pettiness is something that we could maybe do a little bit without. I say that as, you know, someone who works for an independent publication that's here on the ABC. I don't know whether that might be drummed out of me if I ever work for a big commercial newsroom again.
So, Dani, the big question about awards is they obviously mean a lot to people when they actually do win. But do you think they are useful?
I do, but they need the right framework around them. So there's been a criticism for a little bit of time about the representation of the Walkleys and the kinds of faces and names that do get a run. And that's shifted really significantly over the time that I've been a media reporter, which is about 2.5 years now. So I think that's a good thing. I still hold the Walkleys in very high esteem. And if I ever win one proper, then I will hold it in even higher esteem. But I think it is nice to say you're award, not just award nominated, but Walkley nominated or Walkley winning. And invariably, you might disagree with the outcome of the winner, but typically the three finalists in whatever category it might be are usually fairly deserving. There's rarely absolute shockers for me. Are you in the market for a newspaper, Tim?
I actually am not, because they do seem like marvellous ways of burning a lot of money. But there are still proprietors out there who do want to own them. And we really do seem to be in consolidation season at the moment. Now, obviously the reason you're raising the question is we learned the news this week that there's been a huge shift in the UK, where The Telegraph, one of the classic right leaning newspapers, you know, very, very influential in UK politics, is going to get a new owner. The DMGT, Daily Mail Group Trust, has agreed to buy it at an expensive price of something like half a billion pounds sterling, which is closer to $1 billion Australian. So a lot of money. And what it does mean is that the two classic right-wing papers in the UK, which are very influential in politics, The Telegraph and The Mail, will now be in single ownership.
Yeah, absolutely. And we sort of see a little bit of that here in Australia with the sort of, we have obviously a much more consolidated and concentrated industry here. And we've also seen a little bit of that in the States. So we've seen a buy-up by Paramount of the Free Press, which is Barry Weiss' Substack, and sort of the subsequent promotions that come alongside that. And now she's heading up 60 Minutes, and it's all very high profile. Are there similarities you see sort of across those three big Western media markets?
Yeah, we're definitely seeing this trend towards consolidation. You know, as you say, Paramount has ended up in new ownership, and this has been in a matter of weeks since the Ellison family took control, and already making the next move, which is they're one of the parties chasing Warner Brothers Discovery, which is a huge media conglomerate in its own right. So it owns everything from HBO, so think, you know, White Lotus, Sopranos, all of those classic things. They own the streaming platform Max. They own CNN, so they're up for grabs. But they're doing battle for that with Comcast and with Netflix. And this is all happening right now. So in the same way that the Mail and the Telegraph deal was announced this week, the deadline for bids from those three players is this coming Monday. So it does. It does seem that kind of in the Northern Hemisphere, we're very much into a big end of year consolidation story.
We are seeing that here as well. Obviously, the big one here in Australia is, or the big buying and selling is, Seven West merging with Southern Cross Austereo, and that's sort of gotten a green light from the ACMA. And it's gone through investors and so on as well. And it was not uncontroversial at the recent AGM, I might add. But is that distinctly different, do you think, Tim? Are there common threads there?
Yeah, and as you say, and this was a development from just this week, that the Australian Communications and Media Authority, which is the effectively Australia's kind of media regulator, has raised no objections to this deal, which will see a single ownership of Seven West Media and Southern Cross Austereo. So in other words, the same people who own the Seven Network and who own, for instance, Triple M, the kind of the sport and rock network, and also the Hit Radio Network, which includes things like Today FM and The Fox in Melbourne, all going to be in one ownership. So that sort of does feel like two small to medium-sized companies coming together to try and find scale. So maybe a slightly different story to the UK and the US, but honestly, not that different.
Where do you think the next big move is then? We know that Nine are very heavily rumoured to be putting their radio division up on the market. So that's your 2GB, your 3AWs, your 6PRs, 4BC in Brisbane. Is that something that you think is going to be the next consolidation? Is now Nine Entertainment maybe splashing out elsewhere?
Yeah, one of the questions about Nine Entertainment, who obviously, as the name would suggest, they own the TV network. They also own various publications, including the Sydney Morning Herald, The Age, the Australian Financial Review, is what will they do next? Because they already have a bit of money from selling their stake in Domain, and they might get a little bit more from selling their radio network, which has never fully felt like a part of that business. So there is a sort of unofficial bidding process already going on. And I think one of the questions is, would they end up spending that money on perhaps buying an outdoor advertising company? So that's one thing that we could see happen. And then I suppose more widely on that question around consolidation in the media in Australia is the company ARM Media, the people who own the KISS network and the Gold network. Will they stay independent? We'll have to wait and see about that one as well. You're listening to Medialand on ABC Radio National. I'm Tim Burrows.
And I'm Danielle Syed, filling in for Vivian Kelly.
What are you really gambling with? Now, you might recognise those words, Dani, from the very brief window of advice which has to follow gambling advertising now.
You win some, you lose more, don't you, Tim? The amount of advertising for gambling, where it's allowed and the tone it has to take, has been a political and business football for decades in Australia.
And as the current government follows its predecessors in saying that it's going to increase regulation, history suggests that we shouldn't be holding our breath.
Quentin Beresford has written books on everything from the hunt for the Tasmanian tiger to the rules and regulations that bind our environmental laws. His recent obsession has been the gambling industry in Australia, and his latest book, Hooked, investigates the impact of gambling on our daily lives.
He's with us to talk about the media side of that equation. Quentin, thank you so much for joining us on Medialand.
Thanks for the invitation.
Now, briefly, Quentin, we should just probably start by just getting some definitions. When we talk about gambling advertising, how do you see that definition?
Well, that's interesting, isn't it? Because it occurs in a number of formats and in a number of forums. And, of course, families can go to the football and see gambling advertising plastered all over the grounds because the big sporting codes have multi-million dollar deals to be partners. So that's one dimension of it. Second dimension, of course, is the tsunami of gambling ads that appear on free-to-air television directed at sporting broadcasts. And then, of course, you've got the gambling that appears in social media forums. And, so it's multi-dimensional. And I would define it, and I'm sure you might think this is quite controversial, and I guess that's my role to be that in this space. I look at it not so much as marketing, but as propaganda, because the sheer volume of it is kind of unprecedented. And secondly, it's designed really to maximise the gambling industry, and that comes with significant harms.
And just on that point on volume, I mean, my sense is there was a moment maybe 5 or 6 years ago where it really felt like it hit peak volume. Would you agree with my sense that maybe things have fallen off a little bit since then?
Look, I think that, well, firstly, it really spiked, gambling advertising really spiked with the rise of online gambling. And that really took off with the advent of the first smartphones, 2007, 2008, that's where you can see the volume going up because the gambling industry, in league with the big sporting codes, could see an opportunity there to really maximise it. But I don't know that it's significantly decreased because, for instance, my wife and I were sitting watching SBS the other week, in the lead up to the Melbourne Cup. And there was one gambling ad after another, ad infinitum, for the Melbourne Cup. So I think it spikes around marquee sporting events.
But I think one point SBS would make is when it comes to streaming, they do at least allow people to opt out of seeing gambling ads, which is unusual amongst the media owners.
Yeah. Well, I didn't know that, so that's interesting. I'll have to go back and fix my TV.
Quentin, just on that sort of reduction and to the extent that it has happened a little bit, I mean, Sportsbet have voluntarily removed, for example, same-game multi-advertising from their free-to-air broadcasts. Is that, you think, a response to, and do you think the gambling companies are cognizant of sort of a shift in public perception of the industry?
If it has decreased, and I haven't seen recent figures, that's the reason why. The public is absolutely outraged that the Albanese government hasn't done anything meaningful yet to reduce, let alone ban, the number of gambling ads that families and kids particularly are exposed to. So, yes, I think they are conscious of public opinion. They're very aware, of course, what happened to the tobacco industry. You know, go back 20 years and we had the Winfield Cup and all the rest of the involvement of the tobacco industry in sport and public campaigning ended that. Now, the big gambling companies, I think, are conscious. Interesting too, the alcohol industry doesn't quite take quite the same aggressive stance that the gambling industry has in terms of the volume and nature of their ads. So yes, I think there's probably some awareness that this may have gone too far, but I don't know exactly what the latest stats say.
I'm interested in you bringing up the Albanese government's response to this. Obviously, it commissioned a report in 2022, which produced findings in 2023, the Murphy Report, the Win Some, You Lose More Report, and sort of key amongst its recommendations was a wholesale ban on gambling advertising implemented immediately and brought in over 3 years. That obviously hasn't happened, and the latest news is that we may not see that at all now after the government has sort of softened its position over the course of the 3 years since. Is there a tension, you think, between this government and, like you say, a public that is weakening in its support for gambling advertising, or at least the leeway that the gambling lobby gets?
Well, look, 70%, as defined by opinion polls, 70% of the public want gambling ads ended. So there's no question where public opinion lies. The reason why the Albanese government appears to have walked away from the Murphy inquiry, which, as you said, called for a phasing out of gambling ads, is simply the government is intimidated by the corporate power behind the advertising. That is, the alliance between the big gambling companies, the big media companies, and the big sporting codes. And they're all in an alliance, effectively, to grow the gambling industry in Australia. And advertising is obviously a key driver of that ambition. And I think Albanese, who we know one critique of his approach to governance is not taking on powerful vested interests and using up political capital, I think he's just intimidated by the power of this. You know, the TV companies are reliant on gambling ads. The big sporting codes, you know, have all sorts of elite people behind them. And I think that, you know, that the national interest here, what we've got to grapple with is what is the national interest? And what's happening here, I think, we really have to come to terms with is that children are being groomed into being gamblers. That's what lies behind this, and that's why the national interest should dictate a very strict approach to gambling advertising.
Do you think it might impact them at the next election, or do you think we'll have other issues supersede that?
Look, you know, there's a whole ranking of issues in the community, aren't there? And I would say this is an important issue but may not be a vote-turning issue. I think that's the tragedy of it. We all know that the issues that tend to dominate elections are cost of living, health and housing and so on. So this would fall down the categories of public opinion, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's not an important issue. And after all, it's the job of governments to define what the national interest is, and it's very clear what the national interest here is. The Murphy report outlined that very, very clearly, and the government just refuses to respond.
You're listening to Medialand on ABC Radio National. Our guest is Quentin Beresford, the author of Hooked, Inside the Murky World of Australia's Gambling Industry. Now, I remember prior to the election just gone, Quentin, Bill Shorten justifying the fact that not much movement had happened in implementing the recommendations. And if I remember rightly, the phrase he used was that the TV companies were in diabolical trouble and that they needed the funds that come from betting advertising in order to pay for their costs. Of course, that includes, you know, the very expensive sporting rights. Do you have sort of sympathy for that view that if Australians want free to air sport, then some of the price of that is seeing betting ads?
Well, firstly, that's an assertion. We don't know that's a fact. In other words, if gambling ads were phased out, then you would imagine there would be other companies, other products that would take their place. So firstly, we've got to assume it's an assertion, not an established fact. If we take it as an assertion, how does it stand up? Well, I don't I think the claim is that probably three free-to-air in the rapidly changing technological media landscape is probably one too many. And everyone notes that Channel 10 is probably the weakest of the free-to-airs. So that may well be the case, that there would be some reduction in free-to-air services. But I don't think it's an ethical argument to say that exposing children to a million gambling ads a year and risking all the social problems that come from that is a sufficient justification for propping up three free-to-air TV stations that may not have a business model without gambling ads. I mean, I don't think we should be equating the two things.
So what do you expect now to happen?
Well, that's interesting. There is an ongoing and very well coordinated gambling reform campaign around the country, consisting of non-government and non-government organisations, lots of really experienced researchers and advocates of all sorts. And I just don't think the issue is going to go away, because people now are much better informed about the social harm being caused by gambling. The public's outraged by the level of the ads, and researchers are very, very clearly focused on the damage being done to children. Now, so I think the campaign's going to go on. I think we're potentially only a short distance away from a major scandal in sport and the rigging of games, because what's happening here is a generation of young people have been exposed to gambling. And a small proportion of those, of course, will go on to be elite athletes. And when they get inside these clubs, they've effectively got to be deprogrammed. You know, they've got to have responsible, anti, whatever you call it, gambling programs inside those big sporting codes to warn elite sportsmen what their responsibility are. And we've had a big scandal in the American NRL recently of games being pulled as consequences of players' involvement. We've had soccer being involved in smaller scandals. So this is really the integrity of sport is at stake here. And I don't think it's too hard to imagine that we could be embroiled in a fairly significant gambling scandal in one of our major sporting codes. So I think the issue is going to go away, and I think eventually governments will be forced to respond.
It is very topical, isn't it? In the NBA, the point shaving, and we've seen yellow cards here in the A-League as well. Yep. At MacArthur. Quentin, has the style of the advertising changed? Is it challenging for regulators when the market moves so quickly and now, you know, we have to deal with a streaming environment or a social media environment while the legislation tries to catch up?
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because the regulations, of course, say that gambling ads shouldn't involve children. These are the 2017 regulations that the federal government introduced, that they should not exaggerate success from gambling and there should be no link to alcohol. But several gambling companies have been fined for producing ads that link gambling to personal success. And I would have thought there's going to have to be more. I think the gambling companies would be pushing the boundaries of that, because that's where they increase the market. You've got to make gambling look attractive. You've got to make gambling look fun and thrilling. And of course, that comes with pushing the boundaries around this whole idea of personal success. So I think that's going to be one of the frontiers where the ads will probably go, and where there'll need to be some regulatory response. But also, I think the other area that's been very obvious is that for the first decade or so after 2008, gambling companies really focused on young men, because young men love sport, and it's very well known that young men exaggerate their ability to predict outcomes in sport, so they're a pretty easy target. But interestingly, young women now are increasingly, and women in general, are now increasingly the focus of gambling advertising. It's just that they've got to create different products to appeal to young women. They're less interested in gambling on sport and more interested in gambling on music awards and TV awards and that kind of thing. So, yes, there have been some trends and shifts, and you can only imagine that's going to keep going, because, you know, all successful marketing is based on psychological drivers and understanding what the market can tolerate and where the trends will be. And you can see that's occurring in gambling advertising.
And I think what the gambling lobby might argue is that when they develop these new products, they're reflecting the direction that culture is going in rather than shaping it. Is that fair, do you think?
Yes. No, I don't think that's a particularly valid argument, because they have shaped quite dramatically the culture around gambling as it now exists, because they've normalised gambling through advertising as harmless fun that you have with your friends. They've normalised gambling in that cultural way, and they've gamblified sport. In other words, they've created this link between gambling and sport as a natural activity. So they've shaped the culture here. Now, there's always been a culture of gambling in Australia, of course, but they've shaped the industrial scale of it in Australia. And don't forget that Australians lose per head more from gambling than any other country in the world. And there's a reason for that. There are a number of drivers of this. And one of them, of course, is the volume of gambling advertising in Australia and its sophistication, the success with which it's achieved. So, no, I think that they're shapers rather than reflecting the culture itself. Because get back to what we noted earlier on, 70% of public opinion don't want these ads. They want to watch their sport free of gambling ads. They don't want to go to the ground and be assaulted by electronic gambling ads. So, no, they're shapers of this. And the public is acutely aware that it doesn't want it, at least at this volume and intensity.
Quentin Beresford, thank you very much for joining us. You're listening to Medialand on ABC Radio National.
Pleasure.
Well done. It's nice to have a new voice on the show with some new taste. So what have you been absorbing from the culture this week?
I've been watching the second season of Starting Five on Netflix, which is about, it follows five NBA players, star NBA players, and that's infinitely better than the first season for whatever reason. But what I've really loved is I've blazed through Tony Armstrong's Endgame, which you can find on the ABC. I do wish the ABC pushed it a bit harder. I didn't see as much promotion for it as I'd like, but it was absolutely fantastic. It really was Tony at his very best.
Well, we did get some news this week of, as part of the politics around the deal to get the quota legislation through, some more funding for the ABC. So maybe there's an argument that they should spend some of it on marketing their great shows.
Maybe.
Well, remember to follow Medialand on the ABC Listen app.
And do you think gambling advertising needs reform? Or is it about right? We would love to hear from you. Email us at medialand@abc.net.au.
Thank you to our producer, Rob Kelly, and thank you to Dani for joining me. Vivian and I will catch you the same time next week in your feeds and on ABC Radio National.
See you, Tim.
Toodle pip, Dani.
Listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.